Hello and welcome to Filling the Sink, a podcast from Catalan News. My name is Leah Bilaiva, and today we're talking about Barcelona's infamous prison, La Model. This year marks the 120th anniversary of the opening of the notorious prison La Model in the Eixample neighborhood of Barcelona. The facility closed down in 2017 and has since then become a site for Catalan historic memory open to the public. Behind the tall beige-colored walls is a history of a prison that wanted to be exemplary but went on to house thousands upon thousands of political prisoners, many of whom were executed. On today's podcast, we will be going inside the prison and talk to a historian about life on the inside, and we will also hear from family members of the last political prisoner to be executed at La Model. I'm joined by Killian Shields. Hi. Hi, Killian.
Hi, Leah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, it's been a while, I think.
It's been a very long time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell me, Killian, about the history of the prison.
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting building, very interesting facility here in the city of Barcelona, not less for its location. I mean, it's actually, we in our office right now are overlooking La Model. We can actually see inside the old prison yard. So it's just quite an interesting thing to have it just bang right in the middle of the city center. But like you said, it's the 120th anniversary of the opening. So that's taking us all the way back to the very beginning of the 20th century, which, as you can imagine, obviously a very, very different political context at the time. It was opened with the idea of helping the inmates to reintegrate into society. So they would basically kind of re-educate. That was the term used by the tour guide that I spoke to, Isabel Centeno, through Catholicism. But like you said, and like we'll hear, things developed a little bit differently in not too long after its opening.
It has kind of a peculiar shape. Tell me about that.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's a panopticon idea behind La Model prison. And the idea behind a panopticon is surveillance. A panopticon is a type of building with a central tower, which allows the whole complex to be controlled from a single surveillance point. And the kind of philosophy behind this is that the inmates would control their behavior, at least because they know that at any point, at any moment, they can be watched. And it's a very fascinating building to see and to walk around. Sort of a star shape, if you can imagine that. So from the central tower, there are six galleries shooting off in different directions, each of them holding many, many cells. In total, 820 cells in the entire prison complex.
Okay, so it was very, very innovative at the time, and hence the name, right?
La Model, exactly. The idea was that it would be a model penitentiary center, a new century, a new way of thinking, a new way of organizing society. In fact, back in the day, it was popularly known, at least according to some media reports, as Hotel Entensa.
Okay, why is that?
Well, Entensa being the street where the main entrance was located, but it was called the Hotel Entensa because at the time of its opening, its conditions and its basic services were really high quality. They had a really good canteen, a really good medical center. They had all of the cells had windows as well, so you'd get natural light in. They had nice beds. Each of them had a shower and toilet as well. Electricity, electric light as well, running water. It was back in the day, in its formation, it was I don't want to say a nice place to be, but there were far worse prisons to be in.
But all the space that the prisoners had, that didn't last too long, did it?
Far from it. 5 years after the prison opened, a very, very historic chapter of Barcelona history occurred. An anarchist revolt, which is known as La Semana Trágica. And this was a week of incredible upheaval, unrest, turbulence. Lots of churches were burned. There was lots of social violence, unrest. And from there, we've got a flood of prisoners in what are essentially tiny cells. If you were to take it on a little bit later, a couple of decades after that, we've, of course, got, first of all, there's the Primo de Rivera dictatorship, the first Spanish dictatorship of the 20th century. Shortly after that, we've got the second Spanish dictatorship of the 20th century, that of Francisco Franco. Now, a couple of numbers. We mentioned earlier on, the prison had 820 cells, and it was designed to be one person per cell. By the end of the Civil War, 1939, The prison had around 30,000 inmates locked up in there, an equivalent of around 16, 17 per cell. Could you imagine that?
That's a lot of people confined to a very, very tiny space.
It's unbelievable to think of. I walked into those cells, and just to imagine 16, 17 people being there, like, it's so difficult to imagine. Like, they wouldn't all fit if they were lying down to sleep. That would be impossible.
Yeah, like, I guess they would have to, like, sleep in turns.
Possibly, yeah. I didn't consider that. But then, obviously, that's a horrible way to live your life as well, of course.
So I can imagine that when a lot of prisoners live in such a tiny space, a lot of conflict can occur, right?
That's certainly what I imagined. And of course, throughout the whole 20th century, there were episodes of riots. But by and large, there was a pretty decent atmosphere among the inmates at the time. I was quite surprised, but this is what Isabel Centeno explained to me, that at the time, there were kind of two different types of prisoners. So there were regular inmates, just those in prison for committing crimes, whatever they may be. And then, of course, there were plenty of political prisoners. And they largely kept themselves to themselves. They didn't really bother one another. But what's really interesting is the political prisoners, they tended to be more educated. They tended to have had gone through studies. They were able to read and write. And what happened was they educated the regular prisoners. They educated even the political prisoners who weren't able to read and write. So yeah, to my surprise, there was actually quite decent convivial atmosphere there.
I see. Okay, Killian, so you mentioned political prisoners. Do we have any examples of any political prisoners from Catalonia who were at La Model?
Most certainly we do. None other than Lluís Companys is probably the biggest name, former president of Catalonia at the time of the Spanish Second Republic, at the time the Civil War broke out. He was imprisoned there. One of his good friends and comrades, Francesc Layret, as well.
And another former president that was also incarcerated at La Model is Jordi Pujol. He was imprisoned in the last years of the Franco dictatorship because he had staged a huge demonstration at La Palau de la Música in the center of Barcelona. And after that, he was caught and he was imprisoned for a couple of years.
Incredible.
Very much so.
Incredible story. But another story that I have to explain is that of Raymond Vaccarizzi. He was one of Leon's most notorious gangsters, a drug pin who would bring drugs in between Catalonia and France. He was one of the biggest gangsters in the French mafia in the 1980s, this was. He was actually assassinated while in his cell. There's an absolutely incredible story where his wife, like many other friends or family members of inmates, would literally just approach the exterior walls of the prison and just shout, call their name, hey, Raymond, hey. So his wife went to call him, have a conversation. Little did they know, there were some snipers waiting in nearby apartment buildings. This is what happened in 1984. And so some of his mafia rivals shot him with a sniper.
Very, yeah. Very incredible.
Gruesome as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that too, of course. You said, Killian, that you spoke to Isabel Centeno, a historian and also a tour guide in the prison. And you talked to her about what life was like inside of the prison for the prisoners. So let's hear what she said.
When the prison was opened, the idea was to create a new, modern facility. The star-shaped prison, located in the then outskirts of the city, was a facility where prisoners would no longer live in the overcrowded and unsanitary conditions that they had lived in the Raval prison. The idea behind the facility was not just to hold the prisoners there, but to re-educate them through the Catholic faith.
They used Catholicism through masses, lectures and conferences to re-educate the prisoners and teach them how to take part in society again.
The new modern ideas were short-lived, however, as the prison quickly became overcrowded due to the political prisoners, which grew after the end of the Spanish Civil War.
Throughout the 20th century, political prisoners came to the prison. That's why it became overcrowded. Just think, the prison was built with 820 cells designed to hold only one prisoner each. But at one point in 1939, when the war ended, there were over 30,000 prisoners in La Model. That's more than 16 people per cell.
Despite the overcrowding and poor conditions in the prison, the regular and the political prisoners got along well, according to Centeno.
We had lost the war. Many of the people who came in were sick. They didn't have the strength to fight. And the Franco repression was also very harsh. Many of them were sentenced to death. But those who came in from the outside came from a war where they knew how to organize and help each other, which then created a very strong sense of solidarity between the groups.
I es va crear un ambient de solidaritat molt fort.
Another fear that many prisoners had was the nightly executions by firing squad, which were commonplace for more than 15 years.
There were lists from judges. A truck would come in, they would read aloud the names on the lists, and the prisoners would go out and be shot. Sometimes the prisoner wouldn't even have time to say goodbye to his loved ones, just his cellmates.
In 1976, prisoners of a Madrid prison created the group Coordination of the Prison Struggle to fight for better rights. The initiative spread to other prisons in Spain and Catalonia.
From that point on, the big prison riots started. They would start fires in the prisons to make people aware of what was going on inside and the conditions they were living in.
Other groups persecuted and imprisoned at La Model were the homosexual men and trans women. Trans women were seen as men who suffered from, quote, extreme homosexuality. And both groups were put into La Model among the general population.
Until
1982, people were put in jail under the Vagrants and Criminals and Dangerousness and Social Rehabilitation laws just for being gay, and the trans women came to prison dressed as women and were abused as women. Put a woman in a prison with 4,000 men, rapes and rapes. It was just horrible.
Thanks to Isabel Centeno for speaking with us. Another thing that Isabel said during the conversation is that if we don't learn about history, it's bound to repeat itself. And just on March 2nd, Barcelona commemorated the 50th anniversary since Salvador Puig Antich's execution at La Model. But Kilian, who was Salvador Puig Antich?
Who was Salvador Puig Antich? He was a Catalan anarchist and anti-fascist. He was part of the left-wing urban guerrilla group, the Iberian Liberation Movement, which is active during the early 1970s. So we're talking about the last couple of years of the Franco dictatorship. And they were involved in direct action against the regime, against capitalism as well. They were an anarchist group, and they were financed basically through bank robberies. He was caught in the act in a bank robbery in Girona. Ironically enough, he was caught in the city of Barcelona, but on Carrer Girona.
Oh, okay.
And
what happened during his arrest?
Yeah, so there was a shootout. A police officer died. Puig Antich himself was also shot in the jaw and the shoulder. And Puig Antich was, first of all, incarcerated in La Model before being later sentenced to death. And he was, of course, killed then, like you mentioned, and not only was he killed, but he was the very last inmate in La Model to be executed by the regime.
I see. And how exactly was he killed? I know it's kind of graphic, but I think it's kind of important.
Worth talking about. Yeah. So the majority of inmates who were sentenced to death were shot. This is quote unquote nice way to go because it's at least instantaneous.
Yeah.
Salvador Puig Antich was not given this courtesy. He was executed by garrotville, which is a sort of handheld strangulation device.
Yeah, it's kind of a medieval execution device.
Yeah, it's almost designed to prolong pain, prolong the agony of it all. And actually just in the La Model, when you walk into it, one of the first rooms that you can be met with is the room that Puig Antich was killed in.
Wow.
There's a small memorial sitting on the floor where his life was ended. He's since gone on to become an icon of anti-fascist struggle, anti-imperialism, also Catalan independence movement.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he and his family wanted it or not, he's gone on to become this symbol.
Yeah, and so I understand also that his sisters are fighting and have fought for justice ever since he got executed, right?
Indeed. Oh, God, my heart goes out to them because you're trying to fight fascist dictatorship as it was at the time. Then, obviously, the transition to democracy, the mentality of the institutions of the courts was that famous phrase, the Pact of Forgetting. So this has not really been a case that many authorities have been very interested in reopening, and they've been left frustrated time and time and time again at getting answers, at getting any sort of semblance of justice.
And our colleagues from the Catalan news agency actually talked to the sisters and also the Argentine judge who took on the case of fighting for justice. So let's hear how that went.
Since Salvador Pujantic's execution by the Franco regime on March 2, 1974, his sisters, Imma and Carme, have been fighting tirelessly to hold those responsible for his death accountable, but so far without results.
We've tried everything, but in terms of the judicial aspect, we've lost, because nothing has been done. Where we have not lost is that Salvador has not gone down in history as a murderer, an arsonist, a criminal, which is what the state wanted. We have succeeded there, but in the judicial field, we're at a standstill.
Argentina is the only country where there is an ongoing judicial investigation into the execution, which is part of a wider investigation into crimes carried out by the Franco regime during the dictatorship. In November 2014, Argentine judge Maria Servini requested through Interpol that 20 people be arrested and extradited. But in 2015, after delaying the process, the Conservative People's Party government of Mariano Rajoy refused.
No tenemos a quien imputarle el delito.
We don't have anyone to accuse of this crime, because all those accused have died, but not through any fault of our own, as we sent a request in 2014 when they were still alive. Spain then refused to extradite them, but they eventually died, and here we are.
Fueron falleciendo y ahí quedamos.
According to Servini's office, there has been very little collaboration between successive Spanish governments and the justice system, and even small requests take 4 to 5 months to process. In 2015, Spain's then Justice Minister, Rafael Catalá, argued that the prescriptive period of the hypothetical crimes had already passed and that the death penalty was included in the criminal code of the time, meaning that whoever authorised it did not commit a crime, citing the 1977 Spanish amnesty law. But according to Pujantic's lawyer, Magda Oranic, this argument is not valid.
What they did can't be protected under the amnesty law, even if they say that the crimes expired. No, crimes against humanity don't expire and cannot be pardoned according to international law, but they applied it to themselves quickly.
Meanwhile, Imma and Carme Pujantic keep their brother's memory alive by giving talks in schools and universities, although it's still hard even 5 decades after his death.
You're explaining things that you don't normally talk about, like Salvador's last night, and everything comes back to you. It moves you. It's human. Anyone would be the same. Sometimes you think that 50 years have passed, that we've got older too, but it comes back. It comes back. Sometimes you have to be very strong because your voice cracks. It's hard.
Thanks to sisters Imma y Carme Pujantic and Maria Servini for speaking with us. For those who are interested in the story about La Model, we can also recommend the Spanish movie Prison 77 and Spanish Modelo 77 about how the transition to democracy was experienced from inside the prison. Another film that was made in 2006 was Salvador Pujantic, and that, of course, is about the activist. So a couple of recommendations for the listeners. So the prison closed in 2017, which is really wild to think about. Yeah. What were the last days of the prison like?
Well, in short, nothing like most of its history. Thankfully, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a thing, especially its city centre location. Politicians had been pledging to close the penitentiary centre for so many years. And then when the prison finally closed in 2017, just 7 years ago, the 14 inmates who were left were transferred to another prison elsewhere.
14. Okay, so they had plenty of space. So maybe we can say that the prison came full circle.
Yeah. Two prisoners per wing, almost. And with that, the century-long history came to an end.
Well, good riddance, honestly. Mm.
Well, century-long history as a prison. Because, of course, since 2017, it has had a new lease of life.
Yes, because when it closed, At the same time, it opened as a museum.
Exactly, yeah. You mentioned at the start of the show, a center for historic memory. And of course, Isabel Centeno, who we heard from, is a tour guide at the prison. So if you're one of the people who wants to go, you may well end up getting a guide from Isabel Centeno herself. The whole purpose is just to open it up and just not forget the horrors, basically, that were committed there, the miserable conditions that were lived there, and it really is worth a visit. If it's a dark piece of history, but it's definitely one that's very interesting. And if you are interested in getting a tour, we would probably have to recommend doing that sooner rather than later, because there are big plans for the whole complex.
Yeah, they're going to transform the whole site.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Could you imagine living in a former prison?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to answer that question.
Maybe it depends on the job that's done, the remodeling work that's done, remodeling work that's done. But yeah, that is the plan. Social housing. It's going to have 121 homes. It'll be endowment housing, so for younger people, for the elderly. It's going to have plenty of open greenery space. It's going to have a sports centre, exhibition spaces as well to, again, remember the history of it. And so it's got a very different kind of future in store for it. And kind of crucially for the project that ended up winning the contract, it's going to retain most of its distinctive features, the general structure of it. Like, I keep going back to that panopticon structure. It's a very interesting, quite Orwellian dark kind of idea if you think about it too much. But a lot of this building is going to be retained. And then in between the different galleries, there's going to be lots of green space.
And I saw the project. It looks very beautiful. It looks very appealing. And it's called Model Batega. Model beats, if you want.
Beats as in like a heartbeat.
Heartbeat.
It breathes. It lives.
Exactly. And in the meantime, we will beat on. And it's time for the Catalan phrase of the week. And what is it this week?
So this week, our phrase is pagar justos per pecadores.
Pagar justos per pecadores. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean?
So effectively, it means to pay for the sins of others.
Okay, so we can say that the political prisoners at La Model, they were paying for the sins of the dictatorship, right? Mm-hmm.
The tyranny.
Okay, and that is all we have time for today. Thanks for listening, and please do subscribe to Filling the Sink wherever you get your podcast if you haven't already. Thanks to Isabel Centeno, Ima y Karma Pujantik, and Maria Servini for speaking with us. And thanks to you, Kilia.
Thanks for having me, Leah. Really good, really interesting topic.
Very interesting indeed. And we'll be back again next week with another interesting topic and another episode of Filling the Sink. And on behalf of the team here at Catalan News, I'm Leah Bilaiva, wishing you a great weekend. Fins aviat. Adeu.